Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
It's time now for the Friday gathering, and I'm joined in the studio by Fianna Fáil Senator Lisa Chambers, Éanna Reardon Labour TD for Dublin Bay North and party spokesperson on education and justice, Mick Clifford, special correspondent at The Examiner, Christina Finn, political correspondent at thejournal.ie. I want to start with housing. And since we did the interview this morning at 10 o'clock, I just can't get that image out of my head of these two nurses arriving from India to work in this country. Their accommodation is provided for the first 6 weeks, and they're told that they've to share a bed they have never met before. And then after the 6 weeks is up, they're out on their own. Now, you put that beside the comments from the Taoiseach this week, Lisa, that people, young Irish people who are considering leaving this country will find that the grass isn't always greener where they're going. Do you agree with him when he said that?
Well, look, I suppose it was probably a bit insensitive to say something like that. Factually, it's probably correct in that it's, you know, we sometimes run our own country down a lot, but there are places where it's equally as difficult to get accommodation. So, you know, I don't want to say anything in particular about the Taoiseach. But just that story.
But a lot of people got in touch who have left Ireland afterwards, you know, on social media. And those comments have been reported. I think, in fact, they were brought up in the Dáil, weren't they, by Catherine Murphy? And they've said, I'm sorry, the grass is greener where I've gone. I mean, I heard of a story of somebody who left this country, had a brilliant job, Trinity graduate, working in one of the tech companies, couldn't afford to live in Dublin, moved to Denmark and is paying €500 for rent and having a great life.
Yeah, I mean, I left and worked abroad myself. I have a sister in Canada, another sister that just moved back from Canada. So yeah, look, we've always had young people go away, you know, particularly in their 20s after college, work for a few years and come home. That's not something new. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting there aren't other countries where maybe it's easier to get accommodation. We know that to be the facts. But I also think that there is a lot of good things about Ireland, and sometimes we do run our own country down to a certain extent, and maybe it's not always fair, and there's lots of fantastic job opportunities in Ireland, and there is opportunities for young people here as well. But immigration and going away after college is, we've always done that. I did it myself, you know, more than a decade ago. So
I think people might have gone in other times, well, for economic reasons, we know. For life experience reasons, perhaps your generation. But now it's to have some sort of decent quality of life because you cannot find somewhere to live that's affordable.
Yeah, look, the accommodation issue is massive. It is the top issue in terms of, you know, for the government. It's the issue in terms of all of us working in, as public representatives. It's the main issue we get contacted about. So I'm not suggesting for a second that housing isn't a problem. So the only point I'll make is that we've always had immigration for people of that age, and there are still fantastic job opportunities in the country. Full employment in this country. So there's lots of good things and positive things, and that's just the point I
want to make. Christina
Finn. I think the problem with the, when we're talking about immigration of young people is, as you said, it's always been sort of the economic issues that have pushed people out, or the opportunities that weren't here that people could get abroad. Well, now actually we do have those opportunities, we do have those jobs, but the fact is you're getting paid a good wage and you're giving half of it away in rent. Mm-hmm. And that's the quality of life that people are missing. At the end of the month, you're living paycheck to paycheck. So I think when people are saying those that they're looking abroad, the stats of the nurses that are leaving colleges is just astounding.
Like 64% intend to leave. Yeah, 42% of UCD graduates in 1 year did leave.
And we're talking about, as you said, the children's hospital needing staffing. And then that's one issue that we've been discussing. We're talking about teachers as well.
Yeah.
A huge issue in terms of getting teachers, not just into cities, but into other populated areas, towns around the country. And that kind of brings it back, I think, to what we were, you know, the discussion this week about it being a housing emergency, the semantics about that, whether it's an emergency for some people. When you look at the broader field of things, when we're discussing all those issues, it's not just an emergency for some people that are affected by housing. It's an emergency for all of us because it's impacting on other social areas of
healthcare,
everybody's
and education,
everybody's
retail,
life.
Right across the board now. Mick, do you want to come in on this?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the point Christine makes in terms of an emergency, we have an emergency, if you look at another issue in terms of the war in Ukraine and the refugees coming in here, and there has been an emergency response, for instance, on a most basic level. Senior people in local authorities appointed to look after the issue of trying to house refugees. Another example, building of modular homes. we've had an emergency here with accommodation going back 7 or 8 years. Yet we have, and by the way, there was an emergency declared in the Oireachtas from recollection 2018 as well, whereas we have not had an emergency response. And I think that is one of the problems. And some of that is down to the fact that if you were to have such a response, you'd discommode one section of society, particularly homeowners, particularly those like myself of an older generation, perhaps. And it would seem that the political will is not there to do that.
How would your generation be discommoded?
Well, sorry, what I'm talking about is look at issues like planning. Look at issues like modular homes. There was attempts to bring in modular homes a few years ago, and that was blocked by homeowners. I'm talking about people who are at a stage of life that perhaps they're homeowners and that, and therefore they're more likely to be clued into the political system and politicians take more notice of them. Look at areas like planning and that sort of thing. In all these areas, we have not made any radical changes to respond to what is an emergency. Mm-hmm. And in terms of what Leo Varadkar said, young people have always gone abroad, as with others, I did myself, and it was for jobs, not for housing. The problem today, I think, is not so much that so many are going abroad. You almost had a large proportion of nurses, for instance. I met them all in Australia, and England, and places. The problem is, as of now, there will be nothing for them to come home to in a few years. And that is the big issue. That is where there's going to be a brain drain out of the country that is not going to be fixed by people coming back in a few years.
Yeah, there's a rally tomorrow, isn't there,
yeah, on,
about housing. But yeah, I mean, this is just reaching a critical point now when you have a nurse who wants to work in Mullingar and can't find a place to live. And that's what Phil Nihay told us this morning.
I think, similar to Lisa, I don't really want to concentrate too much on the Taoiseach's remarks, but it does indicate a kind of a mindset, which is not just what the Taoiseach thinks. You'd sometimes get Fine Gael backbenchers who feel in these discussions that we're too critical of landlords. And that, you know, exposes a mindset that doesn't really understand what the reality is. And, you know, if you look at the education system, you had six teacher unions, or unions that represent people in the teaching profession, primary, secondary and third level, all coming out with a statement during the week saying that their workers cannot be housed. And that has a knock-on effect to individual schools. I know of one school in North County Dublin that cannot fill 9 permanent posts. Now, if you have a city where the nurses can't nurse and the guards can't police and the teachers can't teach, well, then the system collapses. And then what sometimes we get from government is that, well, opposition just want to oppose everything. Like in the Labour Party, we supported the Land Development Agency. We voted for it. We bring forward suggestions about rent freezes and government says, well, we don't think it's constitutional, even though it was done in 2015. We said about the eviction ban. And again, for a long period of time, senior government figures were saying, well, you know, we're told by the AG it can't be done. And then it was done. So, you know, I think we have to, the Taoiseach has to mind his rhetoric. Government have to get off that serious, more serious. But I think in fairness, if I'm to be a little bit more even-handed, there is a planning bill coming towards before the Oireachtas in the coming months. I think that's going to be far-reaching and radical. Yeah. So we'll be willing to work with government to see what can be achieved there.
Mm-hmm. Just, you know, when you talk about rent freezes, it goes beyond that now. And I mentioned Mullingar, and Phil Nihay was telling me about Tullamore and Portlaoise as well. There is no property to rent in those towns. That's the problem. It's not an affordability problem. It's an availability problem.
It's a supply issue. And it's not, I mean, the numbers of properties physically available to rent in the country is at a record low. And to be fair to Labour, they've been quite constructive, you know, if I'm being fair as well, over the last couple of years in terms of housing stuff. You know, and everyone's very quick to point out the problems. I do want to acknowledge the kind of the context that we're in. We, you know, we have double figures in terms of international protection citizens coming into the country. We're housing 64,000 Ukrainian refugees. In the last 2 years, the current housing minister, who's only been there since 2020, has had a global pandemic, a war in Europe, supply chain issues that are affecting every country in the world almost. I don't think, you know, it wouldn't matter what minister was there, you could never breeze over those kind of issues. They are once in a generation. They are so extreme in their impact.
But the problems were there long before the war and the pandemic.
I'm a little bit uncomfortable about conflating the two issues. Because
I'm just saying that they are part of the challenge.
I know,
the minister
I accept
has
that.
Had to...
I would accept that. But as you know, housing has been an issue from at least 2015, 16 as a supply issue, but also as an affordability issue.
And the other issue, rental rights. It was not addressed at a time when it could have been, when we were coming out of a recession, going back to 2013, 14, and that time. It was not addressed. And the other issue is over-reliance was put on the international funds. I personally think it was a good idea to bring them in. We had to at the time, yeah. But there was too much over-reliance. There was a laissez-faire attitude to the whole thing, and it was not addressed then. And there's a lot at the moment is about catch-up, unfortunately.
But there is an issue with supply. I know that's the rhetoric we hear all the time, supply, supply, supply. It has to do with price as well. Yeah. People that are in rented accommodation, if they have it's still going to be relatively high, but if they can afford it, they're not going anywhere. They're hunkering down in that apartment and they're not moving like they might have done all those other years to, oh, there's a place near there. It might be a little bit dearer, might be a bit cheaper, where there's a flow of people. People are staying put in accommodation, in rental accommodation, because they fear what else is out there, because there is nothing out there.
But also there isn't the same movement of people from rented accommodation to purchasing their own home or building their own home because of those other issues that I've spoken about. And Mick, you're right, you know, there wasn't the same urgency maybe going back when we could have had it, but we also had a situation where a lot of developers weren't operating anymore. We didn't have the tradespeople in the country. So there's been all of these, it's been one issue after another. And I know people are sick of excuses, because that's not putting people into homes and it's not building houses. But it's just trying to paint a picture that I can promise you, and I'm sure it's the same in the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party and the Green Party Parliamentary Party, at our meetings every week, it's the key issue we discuss all of the time. It's the issue we're getting in the doors all of the time. It's not that we're not interested in solving it. We're trying our very best to do everything we can. That's why there was the renter's credit. That's why there's 4 billion going into housing, a record level of investment. But on top of all of that, we've got these external factors.
Why,
that
Christina,
so
why did you react there to the renter's credit?
Because it's not enough. I'm a renter myself. It's what, 1 month's rent? My rent is still astronomically high, like everybody else's. It's not just about putting money into someone's pocket. You're still paying a massive rent. We have things like cost rental that is being, you know, heralded as being great. It's still €1,400 rental. That's the state's response to high rents, yeah. Is to put people in rented accommodation that's €1,400 a month and say that that's a good price to pay. There's little or no cost rental accommodation for single people. Mm. It is all around couples. So, okay, you might have 2 people there, they put €700. That's still a lot of money for a lot of people. Mm. You know, when I first started renting, you know, I was paying €500 a month in Dublin City. You know, that's completely... You would not get that now. Someone would, you know, I would wonder what they would sell and beg, borrow and steal to get an accommodation like that. The fact is, it's just not enough. And the rents are only going to get higher. I know we have the DAF.E report, the RTB came out that it's average rent 1,400, 2,011 euro in Dublin, like 2,000 euro a month. Like, get your head around that for a minute on how on your salary coming in, mm-hmm. and that going straight out of your pocket.
But we have depended far too much on the market, and I would say we do need more of an interventionist model. I mean, there were good schemes before the crash in 2010 where you could have a rent-to-buy scheme that various different councils had, where you rented off the council for 3 years. All that rental capacity then went into the deposit, then you could then buy your home from. Or what we want to see is more of the tenant in situ scheme, where there's a landlord who could go in negotiations with the council can buy the property, the tenant stays.
That's happening, isn't it?
Oh, it is happening, yeah. But I think there's about 600 if you like, examples of it, or it has been rolled out in 600 cases, but I mean, that needs to be 6,000.
In the last 2 years, the tenant in situ scheme is up and running. The cost rental scheme is up and running. I know it's not enough. There's been significant schemes in terms of there's the first time buyer scheme is still there. You've got the government equity scheme. There's been loads of new schemes in the last 2 years, and I know they're not all doing
small, dense leases on there.
Yeah. But I suppose it's evidence of a house minister that is doing absolutely everything he can to try and get housing supply up in a landscape where it is just incredibly challenging.
But I fear there's a lack of flexibility, for instance, with the first home scheme, so the shared equity scheme. Yeah. You know, people have been critical. I think Sinn Féin was sort of against it, but everyone, I think, has kind of gotten behind it as much as they can now. But there's cases around the country where new bills are popping up, and particularly one in the County of Meath at the moment, and it's 355,000 for a new built house. It's 5,000 over the first home scheme. And I know a lot of people in government are asking why there's a lot of new bills that are happening around the country, and that first home scheme, which would have helped a lot of people get their hands on a new property, is just out of reach. So the developments are even overpricing outside of the government policies.
Can we move on to what happened during the week with those protests in East Wall? Now, people have talked a lot about those. They're not the only protests that happened, Mick, and I want to go to you first because I know you were there and you witnessed some of it. They're not the only protests that happened. There have been many across the country. A lot of attention focused on this because it was very well attended. Like, there were hundreds of people there. What did you see?
I was down there Tuesday night, which was the third night of it. There's about 200 people there. The one issue that people bring up is this issue of far-right elements there. They were there. They were relatively obvious, and there were suggestions from a number of people I spoke to that they recognised them for what they were and that they saw their concerns as entirely separate to any agenda that was being pushed. And that was even more noticeable at the end of the main protest, about 20 individuals. And to be fair, they moved the protest down from the ESB building, and they made a point of saying it was done to ensure that nobody be chanting at people who are inside there. Obviously, people who've come from some conflict-ridden areas around the world. But a small group went up outside the building, and the rhetoric coming out of them was undoubtedly feeding into that whole far-right agenda. I think the bigger problem there, Claire, is that what's happening online, because, and this is a recurring theme wherever these issues have arisen, there's a complete lack of consultation and information with communities where large numbers of people are being brought in. Now, it has to be said, some people are talking about consultation, what they want is forewarning in order to simply oppose it. But I don't think that's universal. I think there are others. The notion of being left in the dark about what's happening and then suddenly this happens, that has been an issue that's there. The other theme that's constant to a lot of them is, and this is very unfortunate as well in my opinion, and that is that there people are distinguishing between people fleeing the war in Ukraine and those who are coming through the international protection system. And that is feeding through. That's at official level as well, remember.
And do you think that advance warning and consultation would have avoided that protest in East Wall?
I think it would probably have lessened it. I don't think it would necessarily have avoided it at all. And it is correct to say that to some extent that's used as an excuse for people who want to oppose it anyway. But there is a major issue in terms of what one person described me as front of house. I mean, that somebody isn't out explaining to communities and on a broader scale that this is necessary, that we're dealing with people who are in a horribly vulnerable situation irrespective of where the vast majority came from. And that lack of front of house effort, if you want to call it that, I think is definitely an issue.
We had Danny McConnell from your own papermaker on the show during the week yesterday, in fact, and he was talking about concerns that he's heard from senior ministers around social cohesion. Lisa, is the government worried about this?
They are. Absolutely. And Mick is right. There is a distinction, I think, in terms of people's reactions to housing Ukrainian refugees as opposed to those that are non-Ukrainian. But, you know, I think that the vacuum in information probably does facilitate those that are not being good-natured in terms of their protest and voicing their concerns. You know, there are genuine concerns in some areas around there's a lack of school places. I know that there are some schools where there's kids being accommodated in the hallway because there just isn't space in the building. GP services, they're reasonable questions to ask. You know, can local services accommodate a doubling of the population in one small village? You know, they're reasonable questions. And Roderick O'Gorman has said he will provide that information and engage with communities. But there is a level of racism in some of the commentary online in particular. Let's be honest about it. There's some scaremongering that we're getting, you know, hundreds of single men from certain countries. That's just completely factually untrue. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example of, and I won't say where they're located, but I've got, there's a young girl, 24 years of age. She's from the Congo. She's with three of her siblings. Her parents are not with them. The youngest is 12 years of age. How have they managed to get here is incredible. And what they've been through is just horrific. That's the kind of profile of individuals that are coming in here that are fleeing really terrible situations. So the war in Ukraine is awful, but we have people coming in from other parts of the world that have just, the fact that they've got here is a miracle, and they need help and support and all of that. And there is a distinction in terms of how we, I suppose, deal with the Ukrainian refugees, and that it's much more streamlined. You know, within a couple of days, they've got their PPS number, they can get out working, and the same isn't, it's not the same
system.
But again,
this comes back to planning and to the government's responsibility.
How could you plan this, Claire?
Well, we've had Ukrainian refugees coming in since March. We've known since February that they were coming, and yet we're talking about concerns around social cohesion. We couldn't have foreseen this. You know, we didn't know it was going to happen. You've known it was going to happen now for months and months and months.
To be fair.
And people are moved into East Wall, into the ESB building, and nobody is consulted about it. The consultation is happening now after the protests.
Well, just to give a bit of context, right now we've had about just over 17,000 international protections and non-Ukrainian refugees come into Ireland just this year. The same period last year it was 7,000. We've got more than double this year coming in. We couldn't have foreseen that. You couldn't have. And then in terms of the Ukrainian refugees, I take your point. It's been going on for a number of months, but it happened, and then within days, people were arriving. So we've been kind of...
And within days, we had government ministers saying that we could see 100,000. Somebody else said 200,000. So this was predictable back then. And, think, and yet now we're still going, oh, we didn't know.
But can I also say as well, we've actually done a pretty good job.
Yeah.
You know, we've got over 40,000 Ukrainians are housed in state accommodation. That's an incredible figure. That's a good job. That's a job well done. We have more than 12,000 Ukrainian children in schools. We've got Ukrainian refugees working in this country. So I think we should acknowledge that actually it's been a pretty good job considering what we've been dealing with.
Yeah, I mean, I think as a country, we've done pretty well in this space over the last 20, 25 years, not just recently, but 20, 25 years. We don't have general elections where immigration comes up as a topic of conversation. Yeah. We don't. And we are almost unique in that in the European context. We don't have a mainstream political party that plays the race card. In fact, I think most of the, if not all of the local politicians showed a lot of leadership in that area, right across every single political party. And I thought that was something that we should be positive about. I don't know what the Department of Justice are really expected to do. Who are they supposed to consult with? Okay, community leaders. But they will say to, you know, within themselves and to ministers within the department, they're given experiences that whenever they've gone to a community and consulted, it just gives them the opportunity to say no, right? And then you do consult with an individual politician, and we've heard some rhetoric from some, I might say, rural independents of the last 2 weeks or so who have used phrases like being overrun. So it's a very sensitive situation. Then there's pressure on the minister. Well, they're, you know, they're sleeping in the airport. They're sleeping on chairs. So where do you put them? So there,
I suppose, you have a rural community that has doubled in size and people can't get to see the GP, or as Lisa said, their children being educated on the corridor.
I accept all that.
That has to be managed by government. Otherwise, you end up with these walls.
Absolutely. And we made clear, claims, demands in the early part of this process that we needed a point person politically. Roderick O'Gorman has a lot on his plate. We needed a junior minister for probably the Ukrainian situation that could, and Roderick O'Gorman was having successes. He's bringing forward, solutions to direct provision that had to be state-owned facilities. However, I do think it's only fair for us to take a step back here for a second. We, as a country, as a people, are everywhere around the world. We are in every single country. We are taught in school about how poorly the Irish were treated here, and in every other country of the world. So I think we have a historic and moral obligation just to take a little step back for a second and to realise, to put ourselves in the position of those people who are residing in that ESB
building.
Just
a very quick thing, okay? Anna is absolutely right, but the issue is, what is happening now is not a transient thing. Okay, the war in Ukraine will end someday, but immigration is in a different phase now between climate, between developing countries, everything. What is needed is a permanent situation, a permanent outpost somewhere, a permanent person, a permanent figure in government that is over all of this, because cannot continue with a situation.
Which we called for,
notwithstanding, and Aon is correct in terms of some people just use it to oppose, but you can't continue with a situation where these things suddenly open up overnight, dotted around the country.
You spoke about the East Wall protests. Can we just to take a more positive angle on this issue? We've Ukrainian refugees and non-Ukrainian refugees accommodated pretty much in every county in the country. And the one or two issues have popped up in some areas. For the most part, it's been extremely positive.
Well,
take Killarney, for example.
Yeah.
They were fighting to keep people in their area. Mm-hmm. They set up a community group there that actually was all about integration, getting people jobs and schools. So it's been extremely positive 90% of the time.
Similarly in Darndale, in my constituency, where the parents are upset that some family's been moved out of the hotel in Santry because they're going to local schools and have made friends. So,
but I think Mick highlights a good point there. When I was coming in to speak about this, I was reminded that one of the first things I ever wrote was, I was 15 and I wrote into the Irish Times at the time about the treatment of asylum seekers in Ireland. I had a look back at that letter last night, and I just actually can't believe that we're still in the same place as we are now, having the same debate, because the lessons clearly haven't been learned. Because, as we said, we have high numbers coming in at different points in time over the last 10, 15 years' time, and there's always some sort of panic response situation that the government is dealing with. I think when we're talking about the East Wall situation and probably in countless other places around the country, is it's the vacuum of information. And when there's a vacuum of information, someone will always step in to fill that void. And the government should be the people that are doing that.
You can't really say that this situation is the same. I mean, this is unprecedented, the numbers. We've always had immigration.
But 20 years ago, we were having
asylum seekers
and refugees that were never arriving in Ireland.
Yeah,
it was a brand new thing for Irish citizens to be dealing with, and the panic ensued. The same thing, was still happening.
But this is a different scale.
The government surely
has
to focus on protecting that goodwill that exists out there. And if you're worried about social cohesion, then you've got to accept that you've got a role to play.
Definitely.
In nurturing that sense of caring.
And when I say there's a concern,
they should be out there. They should be...
And that's my role as a public representative. I'm putting that story out there today. And that's why we kind of focus on sometimes the misery and the bad stuff. And there isn't enough space or time on shows like this to talk about the good news and the good things that are happening. And, you know, when I say that there's concern around social cohesion, it's because we have to be aware of that. And that has to be, part of the response to keep an eye on that. But for the most part, across communities, it's been extremely positive. And I'm not saying there aren't problems. But my God, what we've been dealing with is incredible. And I think we've done a good job for the most part in accommodating people and looking after them.
To be fair, Lisa, it's been extremely positive in terms of Ukrainian refugees. It hasn't been as positive in places
in terms of international protection. I'd accept that.
No, because they're white Christians, Ukrainians.
Yeah,
and there's a different view of those who aren't.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's all these racial stereotypes that feed into that.
That's the issue. And, the quicker we can get to a place where people accept that the vast majority of people are fleeing some kind of pestilence or conflict, the better for everyone.
Okay, a quick word. We haven't much time left, but I just want to touch on the final cervical check report from Gabriel Scally. And he's pleased that many of the issues that he identified have been acted on. He is concerned, though, about open disclosure, full open disclosure in the medical field. And we know that the Patient Safety Bill is on the way.
Yeah.
He feels that it's flawed and it should be changed. Eoin, do you agree with him?
Well, we're going to have to investigate. Look, in fairness to government, they have said they're going to prioritise this and do it before Christmas. We, as an entire Oireachtas, have a responsibility to enact it, but we have to enact it so that it can be effective, because, as Vicky Phelan herself said, all of this was not for her, so that would never happen again. So if it's flawed, we'll listen to what he has to say, we'll investigate the bill and try to improve it.
It's flawed from his point of view, but we know the HSE has spoken to the Minister for Health and said that they are concerned when it comes to screening services, that if there is open disclosure, that it could have unintended consequences.
Yeah, and I mean, I take on board their point. And is there a risk? Of course there is. Nothing is 100% certain. But the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, is fully committed to open disclosure for screening services. And that's the plan. The bill, the Patient Safety Bill, is due to pass all stages in both houses before the end of this term. And it's been called the Vicky Phelan Bill. I think that would be her legacy. And really importantly, from Gabriel Scally's report, it's just fantastic to see him say that we can now have confidence in the screening programme, that the checks that are there, the quality assurance, the labs, and that it's a better service than when we started. Okay. That's a good point.
All right, our time is up, unfortunately, but thank you all for coming in, and have a lovely weekend. Lisa Chambers, Eoin O'Riordan, Mick Clifford and Christina Finn. And that's it from us for today and this week. Thank you for listening. Today's programme was produced by Deirdre Lyne, research by Amy Ryan. Our broadcast coordinator was Louise Kerr-Ross. Mark McGrath was on sound. It's over now to Ronan Collins.